Senator, please come to order. Okay, reports from standing committees.
February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred Senate File 46, Elections, Notices, and Resolutions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott, excused Senator Agar, Senator Nethercott, acting chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 12, to whom was referred Senate File 68, Amendments to Agency Plans and New Program Review 2, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe we're ready to go back in the Committee of the Whole.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, I have a motion. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate re-resolve itself back at the Committee of the Whole once again.
Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Kinski.
Three glasses for everybody.
That might be the one I took water from.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 16. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 16, Financial Assurance Class 1 and 5 UIC Wells, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to environmental quality. Was referred to committee number 9, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises and report that do so with a favorable consideration of Senate File 16. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 16, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 16. And for an explanation of this bill, I ask that you call upon the good senator from the Ivory Towers.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 16, Financial Assurance Class 1 and Class 5, UIC Wells, is a Joint Minerals Committee interim discussion. It is relatively straightforward, and what it does is provide for the opportunity for financial assurances for future permits that are issued, renewed, or transferred after July 1st, 2018, that are Class 5 underground injection facilities. The concept here is currently we already have financial assurance allowance for the DEQ for Class 1 hazardous waste or non-hazardous waste underground injection facilities, but there is no such language in statute for the Class 5. This remedies that and allows for those financial assurances to be in place under the conditions that it's basically from this time point forward. So going into the legislation itself, you see on page 2 is the bulk of the bill. This is allowance for the administrator of Department of Environmental Quality recommending to the director rules, regulations, or standards for the permits. And it goes into the existing language, which is currently dealing with hazardous waste injection wells. We don't have any of those in the state. And then amends those such that we're specifically allowing for Class 1 hazardous waste, you see on line 11, or non-hazardous waste, or Class 5 coal bed methane underground injection facilities. These rules, regulations, standards, this is on line 15 and beyond, and permit systems recommended and prescribed under this paragraph shall apply only to any permit issued, renewed, or transferred after July 1st, 2018. So this is not a backwards application. It's a forwards application. However, of those 105 wells out there that would be eligible, 75 of them are under a general permit that's being negotiated. 35 of them are being individual wells. Those permits would be expiring. Most of them within the next 5 years, but certainly within the next 10 years. And then upon their expiration, if there is a renewal application, it would be subject to the new language. On to page 3, we've got basically a split implementation date where Section 2 indicates that before July 1st, 2018, the DEQ shall initiate the rulemaking process. Section 3 indicates that the rest of it is effective July 1st, 2018. When we look at the amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, it's just a minor modification to create some parallel language. And what that language is, the heart of that language, is on page 2, line 12. The way the language in current bill draft is structured, we refer to a Class 1 hazardous waste or non-hazardous waste underground injection well. And then we're going to refer to a Class 5 coal bed methane underground injection facility. We wanted to make sure that we were using the same word in both instances to avoid any confusion. And the correct phrase is going to be facility or facilities. And then there's conforming amendment throughout the bill. That's the bill. I urge the body for favorable consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 16. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Rothfuss's motion to amend Senate file.
Point of order. The motion was made by Senator Von Fladen.
All those in favor of Senator Von Fladen's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 16, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Further discussion, back on the bill. Senator B., Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to talk a little bit about page 2, line 12, Class 5 coal bed methane underground injection facility. You know, exactly what does that mean in terms of the reality of it? Are there these existing coal bed methane wells that might be drilled in the future? Is that what we're talking about? Because you talk about underground injection facility. Just want to be sure about the definition of where, what you're doing there. You know, and also the Oil and Gas Commission has rules and regulations and requirements and bonding requirements on when you drill these wells. Are we getting into another area? Do we have duplicative bonding and requirements? Because I know they're heavily bonded by the Oil and Gas Commission as well. So just a little more discussion on what this really is going to mean to if we ever have a chance to drill any coal bed methane wells again.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The methane injection wells are just that, where the wastewater from the wells, it wouldn't have anything to do at all with the methane well itself. This would be just the injection aspect of getting rid of the wastewater. And I don't really think we'll be drilling any methane wells soon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then...
Senator Bebout.
How many, if this had been in place, were there a lot of injection facilities?
It's on.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, good, that clarifies that up. How many of these underground injection facilities are there out there in place now? And it was an issue, and it's, that's why we're including them, because they were not abandoned properly. Is that part of the problem?
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to address the President's concerns, there were 492 of them, or are 492 of them, that are qualified as Class 5 wells. Of those, 318 of them are currently in a plugging and abandonment program, and that's in cooperation with the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. There's actually a discussion regarding which entity is responsible for which P&A. Of the remaining, there are 174 where there is no bonding of any sort whatsoever. Of those, DEQ knows that 69 of them are orphaned and are their responsibility. There won't be anything for that. That's a $660,000-ish liability that they're looking into. And then there are 105 that are currently in operation that are Class 5 CBM injection wells that are still in operation today. Those are either being renegotiated for renewal, 75 of them, or 30 others are individuals, and it might expire, it might be renewed, but those are still currently under permit. So the universe that this is applying to currently is 105 Class 5 injection wells. There is a possibility in the future, certainly, of new applications, but that's what we're talking about.
Further discussion on Senate File 16. Question having been called for, all those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 16, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 16 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 44. Clerk will please read the bill. Whoop, sorry. Senator Baldwin.
Privilege of the floor, please.
You may have it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to take this opportunity to embarrass and to honor two people that are visiting from the west side of the state. They thought I wouldn't do this, but we're going to do it anyway. We have our county clerk, Jeannie Wagner, and our deputy county clerk, April Brunsky, if we can welcome them to the Senate.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, since we've taken a short pause, if I could have privilege of the floor myself, please.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. I just want to recognize somebody who's been back here for a couple of days, but the president of our local college is back here, Dr. Darren Devine, and would you please help me welcome him all week long to the Senate? Thank you.
Okay. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 44. Clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 44, Fire Protection Revolving Account, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to the Fire Protection Revolving Account. It was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 44 do pass. And for an explanation of the bill, I would ask that you call upon the Honorable Senator Barnard.
Senator Barnard.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, we're here to talk about Senate File 44, Fire Protection Revolving Account. The Fire Protection Revolving Account is an account administered by the State Forestry Division. Currently, the revolving account allows the State Forestry Division to build, maintain, fix volunteer fire department equipment and response vehicles around the state. The account also allows the WSFD to act as the financial agent when purchasing discounted federal equipment for departments across the state. The bill minimally modifies language in Statute 36-2-109 to allow the division to provide further services to counties and rural fire districts. This bill will allow this division to cut payment times to counties for billable fires by months without placing any financial burden on the state. This does this by providing a buffer to counties until reimbursement can be delivered by the federal government. Federal government reimbursement times can range anywhere from 3 months to a year and a half. Sometimes it's a long time until these counties get their money. An additional benefit due to reduced reimbursement time frames allows this bill incentives to county personnel to be more involved in wildland fire, thus improving statewide qualifications and qualifications levels and increasing the overall capacity of Wildlife Service at both state and local levels. For a definition of what is a billable fire, you can turn to the Senate File 44 on page 2 and line 7. It starts out, says, as used in this section, a billable fire expenses means any payment received from a federal, state, or local entity for fire protection services or another related activities. Mr. Chairman, would you indulge me for another minute here?
Yeah, one more minute.
Pardon?
Yes, one more.
On July 2016,
Senator Case.
I was traveling with my family.
There's no limit on time in Committee of the Whole.
Okay.
Point of order.
True, but he only wanted one, and I was hoping he'd end after that.
True, but it's still a point of order.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Senate File 44, further discussion? Further discussion? Question hasn't been called. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 44, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 44 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 53. The clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 53, Small Water Projects, an act relating to water development, sponsored by the Water Committee, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Senator Hicks. Oh, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Hicks.
You sure?
I am. I am now.
That's my pleasure.
Did you just need 1 minute?
30 seconds. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a favorable recommendation that Senate File 53, is that correct? 53, do pass, and for an explanation of the bill, if you would call on Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a small water projects bill. What it does is eliminate the maximum project cost limitation on small water projects. Currently, there's a cap of the total project cost of $135,000, and that the state would have a maximum financial contribution of $35,000 or less. What this bill does is keep the maximum financial contribution from the water program or from the Water Commission at the $35,000 cap or less, but it removes the $135,000 cap on the construction costs. What we found is the costs are escalating. We just want to make sure that we're getting some water projects built, and we want to make sure that the state doesn't pay more than the $35,000, and that's what the bill does. And I would stand for any questions.
Questions? Further discussion, Senate File 53. Question hasn't been called. Are all those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 53, say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 53 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 89. The clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 89, Local Government Distributions, an act relating to local government funding, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 89, Local Government Distributions. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the good senator from Star Valley.
Mr.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you. We didn't change the government distribution program. This is how we're funding the local governments, the county governments. This is the agreed upon amount by both towns and counties. They were unanimous in their decision to proceed with that. It's 105, and it's the appropriation that was agreed upon across the state. So with that, I'd ask for your approval.
Further discussion, Senate File 89. For discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, my concern in this bill is that it is a bill, and we've got a piece of the general expenditures for how we operate the government here in a separate bill and not in the budget bill where it competes with other items. And, Mr. Chairman, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe it was 4 years ago, this resulted in the first breakdown we had in support for the Appropriations Committee in keeping the costs down because a majority of us felt the appropriation wasn't large enough, and we'd been able up to that point to defeat all motions for increases, all amendments for increases that didn't have a source, but when it was done in a separate bill, there was no other source. And that makes for a problem. So I'd like an explanation of why we didn't include this in the general budget bill where it belongs.
Further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have the institutional history the good senator has from Natrona, but I can tell you that I can recall doing this, and I can recall adding on to the bill with amendments because I was guilty of such things at one time, but not now. So, yes. And so one of my questions was not only here in this building, but when they were making the rounds around the state representing both counties and towns, I said, is this it? Is this the agreed-upon amount? No more? You're not going to come back and ask us for any more, and that's where we settled in on. As far as the question of it being not inside the budget bill, I can recall that we've actually done this separately because that's how we amended it. But if my chairman would like to add to it.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, this is something that started, I think it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, came about because of a protest about the constitutionality of the budget bill. And that's why the budget bill was split into, I think, initially four different bills, because the budget bill is for the general operations of the state itself. And so that's why, for instance, the CapCon bill was split off of it as a separate bill. And the same thing with this. This is for... This is a surplus that is given to the towns and counties, not for the general operation of the state itself. That's why it was set as a separate bill. If you'd like to know more or deeper arguments about the constitutional aspects of it, I suggest we go to LSO because it was on their recommendation that it was split off.
Thank you. Senate File 89. Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we're making a grant and aid to our political subdivisions on a formula. I think it perfectly well can come in the general budget bill. We'll run it through whatever state agency actually calculates the split and causes the checks to be cut. That's no problem. Mr. Chairman, I think the real question is, it's harder to amend the formula, or should be. You put it in the budget bill. You don't want to legislate in the budget bill. So you put it here so it's easier to amend the formula, but I think we're running a risk of having it in the future as it did before busting the budget. So I really think we'd be better off with having this in the budget
where we put the rest of the expenses for the operation of state government.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that would be a perfect constitutional amendment to bring forth and make sure that there's clarity. I kind of like to have everything in the budget. But for this particular bill, I think the funds are from the LSRA, and that's where the one big trough is anyway. And if it was in the budget bill, it'd be coming out of the LSRA. So as long as you can look at the golden rod and know what's in the LSRA, then that's where you can figure out whether or not we're busting the budget. I guess this year is keep good track on the golden rod. But I suppose we probably should ask the LSO to draft up a consideration for next year, and one of you guys can run it.
Further discussion, Senate File 89. Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, not to belabor, but thank you. I appreciate the conversation about this. You certainly will see this expenditure come through in the budget process as we take that up next week. It will certainly be there. It'll be on the golden rod. I have to say that I almost have this preference here, and the reason is, if you look at the back of your bill, you've been provided with your very favorite town and your very favorite county. And you can track this in the interest of transparency. I just think it's a better way to go. I mean, you make some good points, Senator, and I'm not sure what the answer is, and I think we've got a little bit of a hodgepodge. I just realized, Mr. Chairman, I think I know what the Chairman of Appropriations is up to. I'm not sure everybody got this breakdown.
Senator Burns?
I will see.
Actually, my point of order was going to address the chair rather than addressing the other.
Yeah, Senator. Point of order. Say again, Senator Burns. I missed it.
Mr. Chairman, my apologies. His point was that I was not addressing you, and I was addressing someone else.
Thank you.
My apologies for that. If I will make sure that everyone gets a copy of this breakdown. If it is not included in your bill, it may, Mr. Chairman, in the fiscal note. Thank you very much. That was my point, Mr. Chairman. In the interest of transparency, I think everybody does have it. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion, Senate File 89. Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look back there. It's all there. In an effort to be transparent, we're showing exactly where the money's going, who's it going to. If we want to go back and address that change for next year, I think that could have some wisdom from the good senator from Natrona County to fit it in there like that. But at this point, this is not new that we've done this in a separate bill, and I'd ask for your favorable vote.
Senate File 89, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to oppose this particular bill this time, because I don't think there's a sense in the Senate that we need to increase this figure. But the point I wish to make very strongly for the future is that when you have a situation, as we had before, where the Senate as a whole disagrees on the amount and decides to increase it, by having it in a separate bill, you force us to bust the budget because there's no source in the bill we can reach to cut something to offset the increase. And I think that, I think it was 2 years ago, I think that resulted in an increase in our expenditure to a degree we would not have had if this had been properly placed as it should be within the general budget bill. And I think the constitutional argument is spurious. This is a general expense of the government, and it should be done by whichever legislative department actually is responsible for cutting the checks and determining, making sure that each city and town gets, county gets the right amount.
Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a bit uncomfortable on this because I was told secondhand that was 3 years ago, why we were going to separating the budget into four different bills instead of one budget bill. If somebody who was in leadership at that time could explain, because I think they got the direct the direct argument from LSO as to the constitutional reasons for going to four separate bills instead of one budget bill, I'd feel more comfortable.
Thank you. Senator Bevout, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer my colleague from Sheridan County, if you're talking about the way we used to do the budget years ago before we did the mirrored bill, if that's what you're talking about, okay, I'll sit down.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, we were doing one big budget bill up until, I think it was 4 years ago or 2 years ago. Maybe it was 2 years ago. We had been doing one big budget bill, and it was on the advice of counsel from LSO that we broke it up into four separate bills, and this is one of those four bills. And I'm not an attorney, so I'm not comfortable, orating on the constitutionality of why we're doing it this way or why we aren't. I'm just a cog in the machine as far as I'm told by LSO. We're doing it in four bills.
Senator Bevout, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I understand my colleague's question now, Chairman of the Senate Appropriations. What it was, and I think we broke down, and we broke capital construction out. I think we broke out school capital construction, and I think we did cities, towns, and counties. And, you know, what happens, and a lot of you are very much aware of this, when we do our budget bill, is Section 300 becomes a way of writing law. And, of course, it's only good for the 2 years, and clearly there's a real constitutional discussion about how far you go in your language you put in your Section 300 or in budget footnotes, that you're really legislating law in a budget bill, which is really not what the budget bill is about. And so I'll verify this to my chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, but that was a reason we broke them out, because specifically those particular areas were different and could be done that way. It's very, you know, we've never really been challenged on that, but when you do these budget footnotes, and sometimes Section 300 series, you really are doing law for 2 years, and someone could question the constitutionality of it. I think that, and then Senator, my colleague, Mr. Majority Freud, might add to that.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just to add on, if you want to look in your programs to Section 34 of Article of the Constitution. That's what I'm saying. It's just your program, the Constitution. I'll have your programs. So you're in Article 3, Section 34, and if you read that, it's a short section. It says, the general appropriation bills, plural, shall embrace nothing but appropriations for the ordinary expenses of the legislature, executive and judicial departments of the state, interest on public debt, and for public schools. All other appropriations shall be made by separate bills, each embracing but one subject. And so as you look at that, it's a... I will grant that you can look at that a number of ways, but what had happened a few years ago was that there were some letters and some demands made by various people that it was going to be challenged, and it would look like that somebody was talking about bringing a complaint to challenge the constitutionality of our budget bill. LSO looked at that. LSO looked at that. We kind of went down through that. They did some research and provided a memo and presented it to management council. And ultimately, we decided that it was probably, you couldn't say for sure one way or another how that suit would end up. And we thought it would just be better to not flirt with the having a budget bill determined to be unconstitutional and to start to split them up into separate appropriations. Also inherent with that, there was a significant number of individuals in the other body. They were complaining about the complexity of the budget and that there were too many things in it and that did too many things, and they thought that they could get it piecemeal that would, that would help them. So ultimately that decision was made that we would break it up on the advice of LSO and the research that they did, and we thought we'd give it a try. But there's nothing that prevents us from going back and maybe we went too far. As we all know, if it's worth reacting to, it's always worth overreacting to. So... there's nothing magic about what it is. It's something we tried to do, and if it's not working, we might need to adjust it in the future. So, thank you.
Senate File 89, further discussion. Senator Dockstetter.
Great discussion. Just a reminder of the body, 23 counties, 99 towns are in agreement on this.
Further discussion, Senate File 89. Over here. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to speak about this bill more conceptually. So Wyoming is unique in all of the states in the United States in that we distribute more money out of the capital or from the central government than any other state. We do this with respect to our schools, and we do this with respect to our local governments. I would submit to you that it's unhealthy in the long run. It reflects the fact that our local governments are restricted in their ability to raise funds for themselves, and that as the mentality of having to have more and more of local government budgets come from Cheyenne is not healthy. It's not healthy for our citizens. It's not healthy for the local governments. It's just bad policy, and we don't seem to really care much about that and do much about that. But we have to figure out a way to get our local governments a more ability to raise revenue for themselves and not be dependent on Cheyenne.
Senate File 89, further discussion. Senator Perkins.
Just, and we talk, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I think one of the things that sometimes we lose sight of, $105 million is a tremendous amount of money. I certainly never have that much in my wallet. But when you go back and look at the total amount of the budgets from local governments and from counties together, usually somewhere between 3 to 5, sometimes up to 6% of what those local budgets are. And so there's a lot of money that flows out to cities, towns, and counties from the state, and that's absolutely true. This bill, while it's very, very important to our constituents, if you're in one of the really small communities in my district, the money they get from this is really important to them, and they put it to good use. But it's really only about 3 to 5, maybe in some places about 6% of a total budget for a county or a municipality.
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have the audited statement of the first class towns over 4,000 population. The total revenue for all of those towns, not counting, I don't think it counts this distribution. I'm double checking. It does include this distribution. So including this distribution, the total revenue is $500 million. So without this distribution, it was the same last year. So it's actually listed here as it has more than that for state revenue because there was state revenue from other sources. But it's a substantial portion. State revenue is approximately 2/5 of local revenue. I think that's probably bigger than any other state, and it's substantial. And you've got to add the state revenue from all the sources. Now, that doesn't include the counties, and I know that I should be straightened out on that. I don't have the number for the county. So that distribution that we have in this bill is for counties and cities.
Senator Perkins.
And what he said is true, except for the fact that I do not believe that that includes property taxes. So property taxes are in addition to that.
What about your enterprise taxes?
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it does, but we can check this. I'm not trying to kill this bill right now. We're not going to leave our cities and towns hanging, believe me, our local governments. But this is something unhealthy to think about, and this chart does list property taxes, but we can check that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senate File 89, further discussion. Question haven't been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 89, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 89 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our privilege? Privilege of the floor, Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is my pleasure to welcome the WAMI medical students who are in the gallery with us today. We've got Linga Adidharma from Laramie, Madeline Birch from Cody, Dylan Brown from Cheyenne, Sabrina Westover from Cheyenne, Heidi Hannekamp from Laramie, Cody Hansen from Rock Springs, Joshua Henry from Laramie, Austin Lever from Rock Springs, Sarah Mays from Ranchester, Trevor Mordhorst from Cheyenne, Spencer Pika from Gillette, Jordan Reed from Gillette, Quinn Rivera from Cody, Aaron Robertson from Douglas, Michael Robeson from Green River, Shondor Saltz from Powell, Jackson Schmidt from Cody, Ethan Slight from Cody, Mason Stillman from Gillette, and Kelsey Tuttle from Rock Springs. So we know that we're excited to have you studying the practice of medicine and welcome you to the Senate today.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we're doing some introductions, I have a couple of very close friends of mine that I'd like to introduce, and they represent a very substantial business in Fremont County, and actually they're up in the northeastern part of the state, the southwestern part of the state, all around the state, that being a company called BTI, and they also have BTI Railroad, which is involved in a very, very important part of Wyoming called Shoshone. And so I would like to introduce, and one of them is Mr. Cliff Root, and the other is Court McGruffy. Would you please both stand there right back here? And Mr. Chairman, if you would allow me the latitude to say a couple more things. Cliff, of course, is retired, and he's just mostly tired now. And he also served on the Wyoming Business Council for many, many years, has been a very active participant in our state government. Court is a dentist practicing in Greeley, but he's seen the light, and I think he's going to come back to Riverton and be involved in that company. For those of you that are football fans, he's one heck of a football player, played for Riverton. I don't know how many state championships we won, but he also led Greeley, unfortunately, to a national championship. It should have been the University of Wyoming. But it wasn't, so I just wanted to pass that on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, President Bevelt. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 90. Clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 90, First Judicial District Number of District Judges, an act relating to the judiciary, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Lambden. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, it do so with favorable recommendation on Senate File 90, First Judicial District, Number of District Judges. There are no standing committee amendments. And for a further explanation on the bill, I can't remember who I'm supposed to call on. I'm supposed to call on Senator Driscoll, or ask that you call on Senator.
Senator Driscoll, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to point out, to start with, I'm from Crook County, not a county of crooks. This is a judge. So we're to get this really straight, that we're not doing this from the wrong side. So Senate File 90 has to do with judicial number of judges. And folks, we out in the state, as times have changed a little, Judicial District 1, which is Laramie County, which we have more that are short, but Laramie is drastically short on judges. They're short two full judges from being able to have fully staffed for their caseload, and this gives them one of those judges. You know, the last 20 years, Laramie County's grown steady for the whole time. They lay at a confluence of a couple big interstates. Got a lot of travel through crime and problems going on here, and they're having a tough time keeping up with the heavy workload on it. If anybody's gone, they have rough times and leads to time. So kind of looking at that, knowing it was coming in 16, the legislature, we passed a bill that said if you guys will build a courtroom, we'll give you some more judges, and we passed that. They went ahead and passed sales tax. They've just in the process of building their new courtroom, and now it's time for us to step up to our promise to them and provide them another judge. And for all us, that's a big deal for anybody that's in business or is waiting for justice to be served. This tends to speed things up and get it done right. And I'd encourage you to support this bill. It's a pretty simple one. It's good for all. Thank you.
Senate File 90, further discussion. Senator Nethercutt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On and for the bill, I just would like the chamber to know that the need is real and the need is sincere, and justice is much delayed in this county as a result of the lack of the necessary judges. Thank you.
Senate File 90, further discussion. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to put some numbers to it, a couple of years ago we had the judges come to our Judiciary Committee meetings, and they talked about having to work a year and a half out for people to get hearings in front of them. And it just seemed like the nature of the business, when you have to look a year and a half out to try to resolve a problem or ask a question, was a little excessive. And so let's give this one a good vote.
Senate File 90, further discussion? Further discussion? Question hasn't been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 90, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 90 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 54.
Senate File 54, Water Development Project Requirements, an act relating to water development, sponsored by the Water Committee, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, and Moniz. No, Senator Meyer. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with the favorable recommendation that Senate File 54 do pass. And for an explanation of the bill, you get the good senator from Carbon County. I'll call upon myself. members of the body, this just goes into the criteria for eligibility in the program and sets some parameters as far as operation and maintenance count. The first part of it, it says, require each project sponsor to demonstrate the entity has the authority to adequately assess fees or others to cover all operation and maintenance expenses for any water development projects. It goes on to say that any entity that does not have that authority, that the Water Development Commission then by rule or by criteria can establish a program or a maintenance account requirement for that project sponsor. Two limitations on that as we get into page 2 and you get into Romanet I, just as the operation and maintenance account is only required for those sponsors who have taken out a loan from the state of Wyoming to make sure that the state's investment is protected, and that after the loan is paid off, that there's no requirement by the state to continue to make them maintain an operation and maintenance account. And then in Romanet 2, it just shall not exceed 10% of the total project cost in any O&M account. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions.
Further discussion, Senate File 54.
Question.
Question hasn't been called. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the Committee of the Whole does rise to report, that to do so with a favorable recommendation of 54, Senate File 54, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. Senate File 54 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 52. The clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 52, Workers' Compensation Rate Discount, an act relating to workers' compensation, sponsored by Senator Bebout, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 52 do pass. And for an explanation of this good little Senate file, I yield to Senator Bebout.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I bring to you Senate File 52. And as I mentioned the other day on the introductory vote, this is a bill that deals with workers' compensation rate discounts. Mr. Chairman, we're very fortunate in Wyoming to have a very viable, functional, and well-funded in terms of our actuarially account that we have set up to do this to take care of our workers. It's very important in our state, and of course, Wyoming is one of the few states that have the constitutional trade-off on how we deal with this and how we take care of our workers. What this bill does, Mr. Chairman, if you look at it, 2714-201, it deals with the rate surcharge, and we have three programs where we grant a discount to established businesses, employers in our state. And those three programs, Mr. Chairman, are a safety program, they are a drug and alcohol program, and a safety consultation program. Presently, Mr. Chairman, each one of these can be offered a discount by the department of up to 10% if they qualify and follow the rules that are promulgated by that particular department. That is no to be no larger than 30%, Mr. Chairman. And what we have done Mr. Chairman, as we've expanded that in those three categories from 10 to 15% for safety, for drug and alcohol, and for health and safety consultation. Mr. Chairman, this is an incentive program, and the way we cap it so it's fair to the workers' compensation fund itself is on page 2, line 14, it shall not exceed 35%. So what you've done, Mr. Chairman, is you allow the flexibility to the employers if they want to concentrate on a health and safety program rather than the drug and alcohol, they can shift it around and do whatever they want. It only is they're only able to do that for a three-year period is already in existing law. It's a good idea. It really helps our employers at a time like this. And bottom line, too, Mr. Chairman, it provides for a better safety environment, drug and alcohol related, and consultation for these employees. I would ask for your favorable consideration and support.
Thank you. Senate File 52, further discussion. Further discussion, Senate File 52. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 52, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 52 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 12. Clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 12, Public Service Commission Member Qualifications, an act relating to the Public Service Commission, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, and Pappas. No, Senator Scott. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 12, Public Service Commission Member Qualifications. And for an explanation of the bill, I would yield to Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, you have before you Senate File 12, a Corporations Committee bill. This bill deals with the qualifications and appointment of the Public Service Commission. Currently, right now, the Public Service Commission is made up of three members appointed by the governor. This bill provides a requirement that at least one of the members of the commission possess certain qualifications and expertise in order to be appointed to the commission. These particular requirements can be found on pages 2 and 3 of the bill. If you look very specifically, the requirements are quite broad and are actually pretty consistent with the other boards and commissions across the state for the levels of requirements associated with each particular commission and board. So when we look at this bill, it simply requires that either the individual appointed by the governor have a professional license or a degree from accredited college in accounting, business administration, economics, engineering, finance, or law. But it's not limited to that, and in lieu of an education like that, 5 years of professional experience in a field substantially related to the duties and functions of the commission. The Public Service Commission is currently comprised of high-level individuals who actually do meet this qualification, but the committee, I think, was compelled by the concerns presented that it is important to have continue to have that high level of professionalism and expertise, and this is one way to ensure that through the coming years. So for that, I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Senate File 12, further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this is a bad bill, and we ought to dispose of it right now. Mr. Chairman, bills like this are feel-goods that eventually cause a certain degree of trouble. And over the years, the governor has had all kinds of difficulty filling various positions. Because we so restrict these things with this, that, and the other qualification and representations, this one is actually relatively mild, but it's still a step in the wrong direction. It's worked well over the years. He's been able to, the governors, various governors have been able to get good people for the Public Service Commission. We haven't needed this kind of qualification. They find people with the qualifications that are important. And the most important one is you get somebody that's smart with a degree of common sense. And that's not reflected in academic degrees and all that sort of thing. So we're just tying the hands of the governor as he searches for candidates unnecessarily. We do have some control, Mr. Chairman, because we do confirm public service commissioners. if the governor should make a mistake, we can deal with that. They generally don't. And we've had good people there. It's an unnecessary bill. It's an obstacle in the way of the governor finding the best people for the job. And we've got too much of this already in our statutes. We don't need to add to it.
Senate file 12. Further discussion. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think I kind of started all this, actually. Mr. Chairman, I've had concerns about past appointments of the Public Service Commission. In fact, this Senate on a couple occasions has thrown little surprises, and some folks in those days were in the Capitol, and somebody had to run up and down the stairs for about 24 hours to get all that straightened out, and I thought that was a really good exercise, actually. But there was a concern that folks appointed to the Public Service Commission were all of a particular profession, Mr. Chairman. In fact, they were all lawyers, and they didn't possess a lot of experience with respect to public utility work. Mr. Chairman, it is a complicated area, honestly. It truly is not something that you can hit the ground running on, and it helps to have a background in public utilities. And I'm only saying this, I spent time at the Illinois Commerce Commission. I do this kind of work overseas, and I've worked at other commissions. I've testified before this commission. But, Mr. Chairman, I think I've evolved on this. I think this is a reasonable bill. I think when it originally was brought to the committee worked pretty hard. It's basically well supported in the committee, and I think an important aspect as well is the fact, sorry to move away from the microphone, is that on page 2 of the bill, we're only requiring that at least one of the three have some kind of background or equivalent experience. That doesn't sound too onerous to me, Mr. Chairman. There is also a party split on the Public Service Commission. I don't think there needs to be. I think we tried to get rid of it a couple of years ago, and we weren't successful. But one piece that we did add is that members of the commission shall not possess a direct financial interest in any public utility regulated by the commission. I think that's a good addition. These are really, really very modest. If you look at all of the different boards and commissions, there are many, many, many that specify particular professions much more tightly than this one, which is, allows for many different professions as well as equivalent experience. So I think in the end, this is a reasonable bill. Based on the experience that these folks have achieved at the commission, they're doing good work. They're smart, and they've come along quickly. And I'm very proud of them. But I do note that we're going to have change at the Public Service Commission. I believe there are retirements imminent and folks that would be willing to take other jobs in the judiciary. So we are going to have new appointments in the Public Service Commission. We are also at a most critical time with respect to electric utility issues in the state of Wyoming, and whether we're going to be part of an RTO, whether we're going to be under the jurisdiction of the California ISO, how we deal with small water companies all around the state. There is just enormous things in the horizon. I think having one person with some qualification is a good idea. Here's what happened last time, and I don't mean this a criticism of anybody, please, I hope. But the chairman of the Public Service Commission retired, and he wanted to keep his retirement quiet. And so a search, it was not made publicly known that there was a vacancy. And it ended up kind of getting short on time. And luckily, a very good candidate volunteered for that job, but came from another board, actually had to take a pay cut to go to the Public Service Commission. And that person has done a marvelous job of learning the job, but quite a steep learning curve, Mr. Chairman. I think this bill would say, well, you better start thinking about this in advance and look at the qualifications, because it's very, very important to Wyoming ratepayers.
Senate File 12, further discussion. Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess I've got a question on page 3, paragraph 2, little I. I mean, that language is so vague. I still haven't figured out what exactly it says. It says at least 5 years of professional experience in a field substantially related to the duties and functions of the commission. Somebody needs to explain that to me. That's vague. I don't understand it. I'm not quite sure what it means.
I'll get a lawyer to do that.
Further discussion, Senator Dockstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not here to explain that part, but it's been, as I recall, there's been no problem finding adequate qualified members for the commission. So to say that's going to be an issue, I don't think it's there. And this request is just simple transparency. You're not going to have any direct financial interest in any public utility. That's a fair question. At least one member is going to be fully qualified. For that, I don't think this is a concern. I think the bill needs to be passed.
Thank you. Senate File 12. Further discussion. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was going to stay out of this, but, you know, when you start trying to do this and trying to dictate different things, I think it's really the responsibility of the Senate through the confirmation process and working through it. You know, this and the chairman of the Corporations Committee, he's right. You know, this is such a it's so important to the state of Wyoming to have qualified people in there. I would hate to limit the number of people that could be there and we could do it. And maybe we need to do a little bit better job on our confirmation side. I'm not sure. But to start doing this, and where does this end? I mean, how far do you go with this in terms of it? So vote your conscience. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'll talk about the confirmation process, and perhaps my associate in this, I'm not a lawyer, but my lawyer, the lawyer on the committee can talk about the reasonableness of the deal. We confirm everybody. We confirm everybody. We always do. When we've had a little tiny bump and there's been a three in the past several years, they still get in. There's just a little bit of arm twisting that goes on. The confirmation process doesn't work like I think our Constitution envisioned it to. It really, really doesn't work. And in the end, what's our alternative? The confirmation hearing is at the last couple of days of the last session. We vote them all on a consent list, and there is no time to do back and forth and whatever. It is not an effective process, and I will do that.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I as well wasn't really going to enter into it, but it's pretty interesting to take a look at it, Mr. Chairman, when you look at how we do it. It seems that we're asking that it's bold to ask somebody to have qualifications for a job, to actually take a look at it. And, you know, what it really does to me in the confirmation hearings is make it easier because we're not worrying about whether someone actually is qualified to do it. This does help select the right people for the job. And, you know, and the flip side of it is you may end up with someone else that you have a steep battle trying to beat them down, which in truth has actually happened a time or two. And I like the thought of actually having a qualified pool of applicants knowing that before they apply for the job rather than putting in for it and hoping that we train them on the job. This is a key job for Wyoming.
NFL 12, further discussion. Senator Nethercutt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. To provide some clarity as to the definition of, or the meaning of substantially related to the duties and functions of the commission, I would assert that actually alleviates the concerns that have been mentioned in this body, that particular provision allows flexibility for those individuals who may not have the qualified degree, that maybe have experience as appropriate for the commission. Obviously, the commission is related to utilities, and so that would be substantially related. So I think the question is clearly answered, and the language is actually not ambiguous.
Senate File 12, further discussion. Further discussion. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 12, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
That Senate File 12 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 37. The clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 37, Purple Heart Day and State, an act relating to legal time and holidays, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, was referred To Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee at whole rise to report it do so with the do pass motion on Senate File 37, Purple Heart Day in State. And for explanation of this good little bill, I would turn the floor over to the good senator from Casper.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is all about the Purple Heart Day and making us a Purple Heart State. We have 3,600 wounded in Wyoming that we need to honor. There's a total of 4,400 Purple Heart recipients, but 850 died. The Purple Heart is the oldest military decoration in present use and was initially created by General George Washington on August 7th, 1782. It is awarded to members of the armed forces who are wounded or paid the ultimate sacrifice in combat against an enemy of the USA. The legislation designates August 7th, the date the award was created, as Purple Heart Day in Wyoming. If the day is created, the Wyoming Veterans Commission will work with the military, veterans organizations, and Wyoming communities to observe the day with appropriate activities and celebrations to honor Purple Heart recipients. The bill also designates the state of Wyoming as Purple Heart State in recognition of the sacrifice of military members. We will actually be the 23rd state to recognize Purple Heart, become a Purple Heart State. I hope you can vote for this good little holistic bill. Thank you.
Senate File 37. Further discussion. Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to commend the committee for bringing this forward. Most of you know that I have a Purple Heart veteran in my family. And it wasn't until only a handful of years ago that he ever really talked much about this particular medal that he was awarded. Shortly after his troop broke through the German lines in World War II, my dad was wounded. And it's just so appropriate for guys like him because this is not really something that they talk very much about. It's just very appropriate, and I hope you'll support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Senate File 37. Further discussion?
Question
hasn't been called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 37, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 37 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 61. Clerk, please read the title.
Senate File 61, Hunting Colors Fluorescent Pink, an Act Relating to Hunting, sponsored by Senator Ellis, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Voniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Emmerich. Senate File 61.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with favorable recommendation on Senate File 61. And with that, I'll turn the I yield the mic to Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Senator Emmerich. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move introduction of Senate File 61 and ask for your favorable consideration. Colleagues, my primary reason for bringing this bill is safety. On your desk, you'll see a fact sheet which summarizes some research about the visibility of fluorescent pink. As you know, in Wyoming, currently hunters are required to wear an exterior piece of clothing, such as a vest, a hat, or other items that are fluorescent orange. This bill would simply allow hunters the option of wearing fluorescent pink. So some background about this issue. Nationwide, there had been a number of hunters that had been in decline for a while, and some states had sought to recruit new hunters. And so one state in particular in the middle of our country thought that pink might attract more women hunters. Accordingly, this idea led a leading expert on textile science to look at the visibility of pink. This professor, you'll see his background information also contained in your handout, has a PhD in textile science. He has authored and co-authored 70 articles on textiles, and he holds 4 patents. And as you can see on your handout, he talks about his job is to make textiles safer and better for people and the environment. And so through his research, he looked at the visibility of fluorescent pink and concluded that it's as visible and in some instances more visible than orange. I would have provided you his full bio, but it was actually 27 pages long, but you can find it online. I had an opportunity to visit with his professor this summer, and he has become a very strong advocate for pink, not because it will recruit women to hunt, but because of its high visibility. When asked what he would wear as a hunter, he enthusiastically supports pink. Mr. Chairman, I'm not a hunter, but I would like to engage in the sport. And when I think of some of my barriers for being involved in hunting, I think that they include things like my proficiency in using firearms, wondering where I should hunt, what the best time of day would be to hunt, and just making sure that I'm applying with all applicable laws and regulations. Looking at these barriers, I think our Game and Fish Department, nonprofit organizations, and for-profit groups recognize that those are some barriers, and they work very hard to break those barriers to encourage men, women, and children to be more engaged in the sport. A barrier for me isn't that I'm unwilling to wear orange. So I want to make it clear, this bill is not about trying to recruit any specific gender to the sport. This bill is about safety. And I also want to highlight the optional nature of it. It does not mandate that women wear pink and men wear orange. It simply provides a choice. I have heard from women who are loyal to orange, and I get it. Orange is my favorite color. And I've also heard from men who are excited about wearing pink. So at the end of the day, this is about safety. It's about giving hunters a choice to wear a highly visible color while in hunting Wyoming's wildlife. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Ellis. Senate File 61, further discussion. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill, I've never contemplated hunting, but if this passes, I might consider buying some pink and going hunting myself.
Senate File 61, further discussion. Further discussion, Senate File 61. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 61, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 61 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 35. The clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 35, Military Service Relief Act Additional Protections, an act relating to Defense Forces and Affairs, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do-pass motion on Senate File 35, Military Service Relief Act Additional Protections. Mr. Chairman, there was a standing committee amendment. I would ask that the clerk read it in at this time.
Clerk will please read the amendment.
Senate File 35, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 15.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the standing committee amendment at this time. And when we go through the bill, I'll go ahead and present it and explain it in conjunction with the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, and if you remember our discussion from introduction, it provides some safety for folks that are in the Guard and are transferred out for some military service around the world or different states. It could be forest fires or hurricanes or different things like that. Or even within our state, and then they get the ability to suspend their contracts for things like cell phone service, or perhaps if they're single, maybe that's the cable service or different things like that. So when they come back in, they can reinstate those. Now on page one, line 15 after services is where the first part of this amendment comes in, was that because this amendment deals with the folks that are in active service and are actually transferred. So it's not that they're just going to duty outside of the state, it's that they're actually transferred to a different station. And then on page 2, line 10, that's simply a grammatical preference between and or is from what staff told us. So, Mr. Chairman, at this time, I would call for the question on the amendment and stand for questions.
Any discussion about standing amendment number 1 to Senate File 35? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 35, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment is adopted.
Okay.
Further discussion, back on the bill, Senate File 35.
Mr. Chairman, that explains the heart of the bill. The rest of the bill and the other sections there are certainly conforming amendments because it was a created statute. We went from 11-124 to 11-125. And in the necessary places in the bill, we just deleted the 124 and added the 125 and the proper new subsections where it was appropriate. So I would stand for questions. If there are no questions, I'd call for the question.
Senate File 35, further discussion, Senator Von Flattern. Later.
I think it's on top of page 3, Mr. Chairman. It's on line 2 where it says other services provided pursuant to a contract. Was there any discussion about somebody, you know, refusing to pay their cell phone even though they have their cell phone with them? I'm just curious what that other services provided. Would they have an argument to just not pay anything ever that has a periodic payment, even if they're using that product?
Senator Meyer.
No, they would not. If they use the product, they have to pay for the service, or if they use the service, they have to pay for it. But if they're going out of country and they don't have their cell phone with them and they're not using it and they didn't leave it to a family member, they leave it to a family member and they're using it, they have to pay the bill. If it's a gym membership and it's a dual gym membership and somebody in the family is using the gym membership, they still have to pay the bill. If you pay for the service, if you use it, you have to pay for it. If you don't use it, then you get a break.
Senate File 35, further discussion. Further discussion? Senator Case.
Fools rush in, Mr. Chairman. That's what's... Mr. Chairman, I'm kind of uncomfortable with this bill. Private entities, we're interfering with the contracts that they have. And I think private businesses in America are very patriotic. I think they want to help veterans. I see programs for veterans all the time. We have a veterans discount at my place of business, you know. And I don't think it's good business practice to not pay attention to veterans and the important contribution they're making. I think it's bad law for us to get into contracts between individuals and businesses. And I'm just uncomfortable. It seems to be a little bit too much government interference, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Senate File 35, further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think what we are trying to do, we are trying to give our service members a break. A lot of times, I would say that the what you get for actually being a service member is probably not at the top of the payroll in some circumstances. And in situations, I think every little bit helps. Some of these things can be, if they all add up, can be fairly substantial. I think it's a reasonable thing to do. The providers really aren't out anything because when they come back in, the contracts are automatically retaken up and service resumes. But if you got a 6-month stint over in Afghanistan or something like that, you come back and you don't have much in your checking account anymore, and you haven't used anything. You know, so I guess it's kind of like. I guess maybe you rented a car and you parked it at the airport and you flew home and you're still paying for the car rental. Well, no, you get to cancel that contract with the car rental when you jump on your return flight. And so you're just basically when you're not using it, you don't have to pay for it. And I think that's fair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Senate File 35, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if there was any discussion in committee as they talked about this bill. The U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution provides that no state shall pass any law impairing the obligation of contracts. And so if there's an existing contract, my understanding is that there's some difficulties, some constitutional difficulties with impairing with an existing contract. You can have one that reflects contracts prospectively, but it seems to me that this, I just want to know if there's some discussion about that and if how that was addressed.
Senator Case.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to pile on a little bit too. Not everybody in the United States or in Wyoming supports the military, and I do, but it's their right not to. And this kind of forces it's the government stepping in and say, you're going to force in your individual transactions and your business and your contractual world to support the military. Not itself, but to support the individuals in the military. And I want to do that personally. We do it in my business. I think all business mostly do it. But it's not the right of the government to make people do that. Now, just imagine that some people don't support the military. They don't want to be coerced. You know, they already pay their taxes, which go to the military. They don't like that. They don't want to be forced in terms of their business practices. Now, do I respect that? I respect their right to do that. I don't like that they do that. But so I think we're getting in an area here where we're kind of pushing the envelope.
Senate File 35, further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill. First, I will say, as a philosophical matter, I think that interfering too much private business is a bad idea. But it seems to me there have been some practical problems. And one of the problems, quite frankly, in the area with some of these contracts, you're dealing with big out-of-state customers. Your customer service may not even be located in this country, maybe elsewhere, may have trouble understanding the American language. Under these circumstances, it's justified for us to come in and say, no, you've got to behave responsibly and treat our servicemen right. With regard to the argument on the obligation of contract, you know, you look at the origin of that provision of the Constitution. And at the time they wrote the Constitution, they had one of the 13 states, Rhode Island actually, that was passing laws that were just eliminating debt obligations. The debtors had won control of the state legislature there, and they were doing things like that were essentially just taking private property away. There have been, over the years, there have been limitations on what you can, we can and can't do, both sides limitations on contracts. We can make things illegal, and then the contract that says we're going to do this thing that's been made illegal can be held to be null and void. And that's necessary to preserve the police power of the state. I suspect you would find that you probably had some cases arising. There were contracts that called for payment in gold. And when we went off the full gold standard in 1934, those contracts, they're void. They weren't paid in gold. They were paid in legal tender, U.S. greenbacks. So I think the situation is that when you look back through the precedents, and I would encourage the real attorneys in the body to do that if they're concerned about it, you'll find that we do have the constitutional ability to be sensible here, and this would fall within it. I don't guarantee that. I have not looked up those precedents, but I'm sure that it has been done on a fair scale. And I think that the example I cited is probably, Mr. Chairman, one of the clearest ones where it has been done. So I would urge the Senate, both as a practical protection for our service people. And some of these contracts, at least my experience in dealing with service people on some of these things, is very bad. You go through endless phone chains. You have difficulty getting anybody that understands what you're trying to do and why and the importance of military service. So I think this protection is a good one.
Senate File 35, further discussion. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious about some of the concepts here and how things would play out, and particularly with telecommunication services, for example. When you sign up for a multi-year service at this point in time, it's common practice in the marketplace that you'll receive, for example, a free cell phone. But that's on the condition that you have a two-year contract, because they're basically building into your monthly fee the cost of that cell phone. So I get in a situation where I sign that two-year contract, and then 3 months into it, I cancel the contract under this statute and end up leaving the corporation that I've signed the contract with a liability for the remainder of the months of the cell phone. I don't see anything that would cover that type of concept. So my first question is, am I missing something here? How would you handle those types of circumstances when really there is a tangible value associated with the service that's being blended into that service that wouldn't be recuperated? And the next question I would have is, I'm a little curious, I know it's been addressed a bit, other services provided pursuant to a contract that requires periodic and ongoing payments. I think of my car insurance. I think of my natural gas payments. I think of a lot of different things that are, and natural gas payments, obviously, sometimes you do those on an annual prorated basis so that you get a levelized contract instead of a month-by-month contract. So once again, I'm curious how it actually plays out when you have these more complicated agreements than simply, I'm using it this month, but I'm not next month, and I would like to sever the agreement.
Senator Meyer.
Well, it simply put, is if you have a two-year cell plan and you skip 6 months of it, when it comes back and you were in it 6 months and you come back, then you've got essentially a two-and-a-half-year plan with a window in there that you didn't use it. So it just starts over and rolls around. You know, so we can look at that to make sure that that's clear and understood. That's how it was explained to us. As far as it being perspective or prospective, we can make sure that it is perspective. As far as changing contracts and you can't do a thing with it, we have gotten right into the franchise agreements of practically everything that's sold by franchises on this floor before. So we've done franchises on farm equipment. We've done franchises on automobile equipment. We've done franchises in all those different areas. And you actually get in and you change, you put parameters and guidelines up as to what's going to be in the franchise. And essentially it's no different from that. If you've got a gym franchise, it's no different than an automobile dealer's franchise. You got periodic payments on both of them, and that's essentially the same thing, Mr. Chairman. So, as far as the what goes bump in the night, as far as the constitutional provisions of it, there's really nothing that goes bump in the night in that regard.
Senate File 35, further discussion, Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm all for the military and want to help them. I do have some of the same concerns. My specific concern in this case is on page 3, line 14, essentially, that they say that it will suspend until they reinstate service by delivering them a written notice. What if they didn't like the contract? We've all gotten ourselves in some contracts we really don't like, and it's running along. We start a gym membership, and we decide we're not that motivated anymore. They come back, they never deliver this to these people. I mean, I just worry that that's an issue here. And how do we know also, if they could answer me also, that the spouse is actually going with the serviceman? I thought sometimes the spouse has stayed behind. But if they go ahead and deliver this notice, just those are my two concerns, Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 35, Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, there's a lot of talk here about how we're changing things and as if it's new, as if we're doing something new. The Service Members Civil Relief Act does some of this stuff on the federal level. I think that all we're doing here is codifying some things at the state level as well. So I wish people would go look at that, the SCRA, It talks specifically about some of these cell phone contracts and what they can and can't do. So there are protections at the federal level as well.
Senate File 35, Senator Boner.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just like to respond to at least my colleague from Sweetwater County and point to page one, the bottom of it. This would only apply if a member of the National Guard, and members of the committee can correct me if I'm wrong, but if they're ordered to active service. So it's not as if these contracts are going to be canceled on any whim that the service member may have. There's specific circumstances under which this would apply, and just like to, for everybody to keep that in mind, to keep focused on what we're talking about. It's only when they're ordered to active service. Just in general, I guess to get less philosophical, think about the context in which we're having this discussion. We've been at war for 17 years now. We've done so with an all-volunteer force, which is actually pretty amazing. I think everybody, it's really incredible that there hasn't been some sort of draft or some sort of compulsory service. So let's keep that in mind while we're having this discussion, that this is a unique situation with individuals who are choosing, granted, to join the military, but because they do so, avoids other mandatory obligations, which would be which we would not, you know. So that's just is a little bit different. And I think it's important for people to keep that in mind, General.
Senator Anderson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill. The obviously there's a problem, or they wouldn't have brought it to us. There's a problem with some of our suppliers. And I think we heard earlier that our suppliers really are great with veterans. And I think that generally that's true. And it may be that it's just some national companies that where you can't get a hold of anybody in the service department that is having this problem. I have 28 employees down in Arizona, in Tucson, around the base there. I'm really choking you up, Kurt. This is really good stuff, isn't it? Point of order or what? So they have the same problem down there, but they have a group that they go to take care of the problem and have the national company take that charge off. So that was kind of a different deal down there in Arizona than it is here. But here we're trying to say the company's going to go along with what the soldier asks for. So I'm all for this bill. We had it presented to our committee. I think there's a real need. We heard from some of the soldiers that had the problem and all the things that they went through, and they shouldn't have to go through that.
File 35, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't disagree with the concept here. I'm just worried about some of the details. And I still don't really feel that I've gotten an answer to the concern about termination if there is still some outstanding real liability that should be compensated for. So if I have property that I've gained and it's part of this ongoing contract service, as with telecommunications contracts, I understand if I suspended it, then I would come back and resume the contract. But this explicitly says everywhere that I can find that I would have the option to terminate or suspend. So again, if I'm 3 months into a 24-month contract for a $1,000 device where I'm providing those funds over that 24 months to compensate for that device, and then I end up being called into action, I send the termination letter, as I understand on page 3, and upon doing so, the bottom of page 3 says a service member who terminates, suspends, or reinstates services may not be charged any penalty, interest, fee, loss, or deposit, or other cost because of the termination, suspension, or reinstatement. So I'm pretty sure, and maybe this sounds trivial, but I bet the companies we dealt with might think otherwise, that I just get to keep that cell phone that I've gotten regardless of its value. And if that's not correct, how would it work?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'd certainly be willing to work with the good senator from Albany County to make sure that we don't have people out there from the military, I guess, ripping off cell phone companies, because I happen to agree with you that if they terminate that after 3 months, that and they think that they're going to keep that phone forever,
you know, that's not what this bill is supposed to do. And if there's unattended things that's going on in it, you know, this is committee of the whole. We got time to make sure in the first house. We got time to make sure that we get this thing done right, because that's what we do in the Senate. We make sure that things get done right.
Yep. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. I'm just trying to avoid some of this, but without trying to get too far into the weeds, I think our good senator down the row here from Cheyenne kind of hit the nail on the head. I've had two children deployed, both of which had different types of service contracts that we spent and was involved in having to suspend some of those. And there was a case on a telecommunications of an actual tangible item. And on that case of a tangible item, they were informed that, you know, that they would have to pay that for, you know, if that suspension, if I recall right, I wasn't really necessarily always taking care of the finances, that we actually paid the difference on and paid for that tangible item. So I think the communication companies certainly have those kind of things covered. And I don't know that, you know, we need to spell everything out for each of these. And I know that's probably going to get some hits. But certainly on something like a phone, they're, you know, those tangible items, those the companies already take care of that.
We're on Senate File 35 for the discussion. Senator Anderson.
Pay for my daughter's
Thank phone. You, Mr. Chairman. The cases that I know of that have a phone and that kind of stuff, they have to turn that phone back in. They don't keep the phone. I mean, we're not talking about somebody keeping a phone. He wants to discontinue the service. One of the requirements is he turns in the phone. And I think that's universally true. I know it's true where my employees are, and so I'm assuming that's the same contract that's in other states. And so there isn't a problem with what's going to happen with the tangible item. It's going to be turned back in. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 35, further discussion. Further discussion. Hearing none, are you ready for the question?
Yes.
All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 35, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 35 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. You've heard the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Right.
Motion carries.
Good job.
Reading clerk, please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 6, do pass. Senate File 16, do pass amended. Senate File 44, do pass. Senate File 53, do pass. Senate File 89, do pass. Senate File 90, do pass. Senate File 54, do pass. Senate File 52, do pass. Senate File 12, do pass. Senate File 37, do pass. Senate File 61, do pass. Senate File 35, do pass amended. Senator Kinski, Chairman.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. That motion has carried. Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Reports from standing committees.
February 15, 2018, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 3, to whom was referred Senate File 50, Collection of State Financial Obligations, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your Committee Number 3, to whom was referred Senate File 26, Nationwide Multi-State Licensing System Collection Agencies, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 31, Veterans Skilled Nursing Center, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 66, Volunteer Health Care, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 69, 2018 Large Project Funding, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 72, School Finance Recalibration Transportation, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, Committee Number 12, to whom was referred Senate File 70, Revisers Bill, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
There are some county commissioners in the back. I see some from Natrona, some from Converse, others. Welcome to the Senate. Let's say hi to all of them. Please stand up. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate stand in recess until 10 o'clock.
No, not recess.
Excuse me. Okay. Thank you. I move the Senate. Yeah, I move that the Senate stand adjourn until 10 a.m. on Friday, February the 16th.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., General Room S-27. Consider following bills. Senate File 95, Medicare Discrimination. Senate File 75, Biological Products Pharmacies. Senate File 41, Organ Donation Promotion Task Force. Senate File 43, Organ Donation Training and Timely Postmortem Examinations.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, your committee number 5 will be meeting in 15 minutes upon adjournment to take up Senate File 64, Appropriations to State Engineer, Senate File 55, Water Development Account 3, and Senate File 62, Omnibus Water Bill Planning.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow, shortly after noon recess, in Jonah Room S-18 to consider the following bills: Senate File 15, Large Project Account Modification; Senate File 40, Commercial Air Service Improvement; Senate File 79, Vertical Takeoff and Landing Aircraft Regulations; Senate File 56, Real Property as Collateral Bond.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 4, will meet tomorrow, Friday, February 16th at 8 a.m. in the Jonah Room S-19 to hear the following bills: SF-28, School Finance Health Insurance 2, SF-13, School Facility Property Insurance, SF-96, Early Childhood Education, SF-59, Passing Stop School Bus. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Friday, February 16th, 8 a.m. at Jonah Room S-18 to consider the following bills: SF-22, Orders of Protection Revision; SF-23, Possession of Non-Plant Form Marijuana; SF-24, Court Information Technology Equipment; SF-25, Corrections Exception to the Defense of Habitation Law; and SF-74, Crimes Against Critical Infrastructure.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet Friday upon adjournment in Jonah S-27 to consider the following bills: Senate File 60, Wyoming Women's Suffrage Pathway Highway Designation; Senate File 84, Motor Vehicle Registration Deployed Military Members, Senate File 92, Electronic Logging Devices Enforcement, or lack thereof, I think, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee 59 will meet in this locale immediately upon adjournment to discuss and finalize our final plans of the equality reception Monday night. We need your input. We've discussed a couple of ideas. A holistic approach, we've discussed that. But we're concerned about getting the bang for the buck. So we need your ideas. 10 minutes right here, and we'll review what our plans are.
Senator Peterson, is there a 24-hour rule on that announcement?
Maybe.
Senator Burns.
Did I mess up again, Mr. President?
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning in Jonah Room 54. That's the equivalent to 302. Where we will take up Senate File 18, Orphan Site Remediation Funding Re-Referred, and Senate File 45, State Fair Board 2 Re-Referred. And I would like to see the members of the JAC, of the Senate Appropriations Committee immediately upon adjournment, if I could, please.
And Senator Burns, while you're up, would you just go through the procedure on the status of our budget bill, where it's at, what to expect, what can we be looking forward to next week, please?
We'll be looking forward to just fun and games, Mr. President. Mr. President, the budget bill, we finished up the budget bill earlier this week, and staff is busy putting that bill together, and we will start, I believe, Monday. That's your scheduling. Monday will be the first reading of the budget bill, and during first reading, the same thing as the supplemental budget bill, the members of the committee will explain different parts of the bill over the day and possibly the next day. That's when we're open to unlimited questions and so forth from the floor. The second day is when you can put in amendments, but I think that's Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. But you have to make sure you have your amendments into LSO by 5 o'clock Tuesday, so that they have time to compile them and collate them. And then I believe we'll have Thursday off, and you have until Thursday at 5 p.m. to get your third reading amendments on the budget. And then we'll have third reading on the budget on Friday.
Senator Burns, when do you think we will have the budget bill available for the members of the Senate to look at? Will it be this weekend or will it be Monday morning?
Mr. President, to tell you the truth, I have not seen the LSO budget staff in the last 2 days.
Member of the Senate, maybe we'll get that information and we can share that with you tomorrow.
I'll find out tomorrow for sure, but I'll tell you, they have been doing yeoman's work. They've been doing the work of five people, and there's only two and a half of them.
The other thing, Senator Perkins, tomorrow we'll work the last bit of introduction bills, first thing, do second reading, third reading, and then what's your plan is to go into committee the whole and just share us a little bit about your thoughts on tomorrow's schedule.
I think we'll probably tomorrow. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members of the Senate, tomorrow we'll probably run a little bit like today. We ran a little bit. We'll do. My thought is probably do about 10 bills or so. But I think that we'll probably be done. My plan is to be done about 3 tomorrow, so that those who are traveling home can take off and get a little bit of a head start, and we'll just act accordingly. So we'll do that. So if we talk a lot, we'll get fewer bills. If we talk more, we'll get more bills.
Okay, you've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. The Senate is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, the 16th of February, Friday.